broadcasting from an undisclosed location, from a secret hunting spot known only to him and the guy who told him about it, and possibly the guy who told the guy who told him. It's a show all about hunting in New Zealand and around the globe. This is The Hunting Show. Find The Hunting Show on Facebook and Twitter for up-to-date information on upcoming shows and topics.
This is The Hunting Show, and I'm your host, Stephen Spargo. Welcome. Welcome back to yet another episode. And good on you. Good on you for tuning in. Isn't it great to see that now some 16,000 of you have us on auto-download, which is really interesting. You know, that means that you're getting onto us on iTunes and bits and pieces, and you're automatically downloading us. And the good thing about the internet age is I can keep a good gauge on who's listening to what. And I do find it fascinating to see the shows that get the most listeners. Some shows, they do take a bit of a dip. Obviously, they're things you're not interested in, and maybe that I am, but that's okay. At large, we're getting most of you back week on week, and that's great to see. What an awesome time of the year it is to be getting out and about. The days are long and the nights are warm. And some of you will be rolling your eyes at me yet again, saying, well, it's not the best hunting. And you're quite right. The deer don't need to come out as often or don't want to. The grass isn't there because it's all drying up, or particularly around where I am. But who cares? You're getting out and about and you're enjoying it. And it's a great time to get youth out and about. Getting youth out into the bush at this time of the year means that they have an enjoyable time. If they're having an enjoyable time, they're going to want to come back. And that really is the topic of today's show. Hunters as mentors. So joined by phone is Cam Speedy. Now, Cam's a wildlife biologist, or as he calls it, a simple biologist. How are you, Cam?
I'm good, Steve. Good.
Now, what caught my eye is you wrote an article for one of our partners, NZ Outdoor Hunting Magazine, about hunters as mentors. Can you tell us a little bit about what inspired that?
Well, I've been writing for Outdoor for quite a while now, and since Deb and Eric took over, they sort of tried to change the focus of the magazine a little bit more towards the education and particularly the youth stuff. And so I've been focusing more on educative sort of articles, but this youth mentoring one is one that just struck a chord with me. The work we've been doing with Tom Lachlan, the kaiwaho around the Tūwharatoa youth, has been really inspirational for me. I've learned as much off those young fellas as they've learned off me. And it's that whole concept of exposing young people to the outdoors and just in the context, an environment that they prefer. A lot of these young fellas are pig hunters and deer hunters, and getting them in the bush is a place where you just open their ears and open their minds to new ideas. And it's just something that I've been really keen on all my life, because I had some wonderful mentors when I was a kid, and it's just about paying back a little bit, you know.
Isn't that amazing? You know, you've just taken words out of my mouth. I was talking about, we were talking just off air about my involvement, for example, in scouting. And part of the reason I'm still involved with that, it was the great people and the great mentors that I had, and now it's time to pay that back. You think when you're breeding with these young people, you're not only breeding good citizens, I suppose, but you're also breeding another generation of mentors.
Oh, that's right. It's an intergenerational thing. And, you know, if older hunters can't pass on their knowledge and hard-won experiences and learning to the younger generation, then it's so much harder. When I first moved to Tūrangi, I'd never seen a seeker deer before, and I started hunting them, and I went out day after day after day and really struggled. I taught myself, until finally I ran into a couple of guys that just gave me some words of wisdom that just turned it all around for me, you know. And so I've been hugely grateful to the people that have mentored me. And you know, the sort of skills you get from the hills aren't skills you learn in the classroom. You know, that resilience, that physical mental stamina, that sort of innovation, that, you know, you've got to look after yourself. And it's those are important skills that people who are successful in business or successful in professional careers, they have those skills. And, I mean, you look at a lot of the good hunters around the place, they are very successful businessmen, they're very successful professionals. And a lot of that success is due to the skills you learn in the outdoors. You know, you'll see that from your scouting experience too, eh?
Oh, absolutely. And the ones that stick it out seem to stick it out and do well with life. I don't know if that's quite the right words. And the other thing I think is that all the things you just mentioned, as you said in your article, they go on to create people with huge amounts of self-esteem, and self-esteem breeds success, I think, anyway.
Oh, I can't describe the feeling of joy, really, or pride that I had when I first took venison home to my family, and they went, "Oh, this is yummy." And, you know, I'd won it, I'd shot it, I'd carried it out, I'd butchered it, I'd presented it to my family, and they were proud of me, and that made me really proud. That whole self-esteem thing is huge. It's a big spiral up, eh?
You've actually touched on another subject. I don't know if you cover this in your article. I don't think you did. But there's something also inherent when you shoot that first animal. You gain a new understanding and a new appreciation for, one, life, two, where food comes from. And I think that hunters and vegetarians have so much in common that they probably don't even realise. They have this huge respect for animals. They really think about where your food comes from. And taking it home and presenting it to your family is certainly, I think it's something quite primal, but it's really important to me. I find that quite a buzz is not the right word, but there's something about that that's quite satisfying.
Well, it's a part of who I am. It's a part of my fibre. I've obviously got hunter-gatherer genes in me from way back. My partner and I live on a few acres near the Tongariro River with a beautiful view of the Kaimanawas, and we grow veggies in our garden and have an orchard and have pigs and lambs and chickens, and, you know, we shoot or grow all our own meat. And for our kids, them knowing that food comes from somewhere, not a plastic tray in the supermarket, is really important to us. And you're right, we know exactly where all our food comes from. We know it's been looked after. We know it hasn't been suffer any sort of cruelty or been mistreated in any way. And that's one of the cool things I like about going out with young guys is you're watching deer, you're saying, "Nah, you can't shoot that one, bro. It's not on the menu. This particular block has a kaupapa or a management plan. And at this time of year, nah, you can't shoot that one." So you end up watching a whole lot of deer before you finally say, "There's one. That's the one we're after." And so they haven't got this urge just to pull the trigger. The first thing they do when they see a deer is pull the trigger, which is where I was when I first started hunting. I'd shoot anything, you know. And I've matured and grown past that to hunt more like a manager or a biologist, less of an end-use consumer. And one of the cool things about taking young guys out in the hills is that you can teach them those gamekeeper or steward sort of ethics right from day one. You choose your animal, you select it carefully, you make sure you put it down humanely, you look after your meat, and you follow the process right through from managing the herd to putting it on your plate for your family, you know, and that's something really special.
Yeah, and you're interesting you mentioned that putting it down in a humane way. I think as a hunter, I'm gutted when you don't get that clean shot or that clean kill, and we've all been in that position. Well, I'm assuming we've all been in that position where it doesn't happen.
I have, for sure.
And it eats you away to the core. I think non-hunters don't quite understand that.
No, in my experience with genuine hunters is exactly that. They don't want to see the animal suffer. And the meat's better if it goes down without even hearing the shot, you know. If you wound it and chase it around, as happens in some cases, I mean, it's ugly, it's not pleasant, and it's not good for the meat. You don't end up with a quality product at the end. So, you know, it's part of the ethics of modern hunting, in my view.
How do you find, and you've been involved with getting these young people out in the bush, and so have I, where they're okay at that shooting point, you know, they'll knock it over. But when it comes to skinning, gutting, and butchering, it's a whole different game, and that's where the real appreciation for what actually goes on comes from. I found that was the point of turning for some reason.
Yeah, it's not an easy thing to do, to pack a deer, to gut a deer, to butcher a deer. You actually need some skills, some supervision, and some help. And that's one of the cool things, is that the young guys that we take out when they shoot their first deer, they do everything. They're given tuition, but it's up to them, and it's no pressure environment. You don't have to rush it. You know, you've got a helicopter hovering above you and saying, "Come on, hang another one on the hook," sort of thing. It's part of the process. It's part of the meat you take home. You've controlled it from go to woe, and you know, the gutting, the hanging, the carrying, the butchering, the whole nine yards. You have a little saying that I do with my daughter and my son when we're eating venison for tea. They go, "How does it go, Dad? How does it go?" Find the deer, shoot the deer, bleed the deer, gut the deer, carry the deer, hang the deer, skin the deer, butcher the deer, cook the deer, eat the deer. It's a 10-step process.
Yep.
And if you have an understanding of that process, you know exactly where your food comes from, and you know that it's quality product that hasn't been exposed to chemicals. I mean, that's one of the great things about our wild deer herds, is that they're organic produce out of our bush.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing about hunting, and part of the whole background of this show, was that we're kind of veiled in secrecy, or the fraternity, or the hunting fraternity is veiled in secrecy. And it's not on purpose, I don't think, but for people out there that are new to hunting, and I know I struggled with this when I was new to hunting, and to be fair, I'm by no means an experienced hunter in the scheme of things. I still find sometimes it's hard to get through those barriers and get some really good advice, or get one of these older guys that's been hunting for years and years to just take you out and pass on that knowledge. Where what you're proposing here and what you've put into practice kind of nails it, doesn't it? It gets rid of those doors. There's no three secret knocks to get through into this. It really is something we need to open up, otherwise in generations to come, our sport will kind of fade, you know?
In days gone by, perhaps there was a bit of commercial secrecy or commercial advantage in keeping your top hunting spot to yourself, because the more deer you could carry out, the more cash you could make it, a little bit distasteful. And I think that's part of the secrecy. But I also think there's a little bit of anti-hunting stuff around that people feel a bit uneasy about. You know, I'll say, you're one of these macho Rambo hunters, are you? And I go, no. I hunt because I want to understand and control what I put on my plate for my family. Mm. Yeah, so I say to people, when they say, oh, so you're a hunter, and I say, yeah, I am, are you? No. Don't you eat meat? Yes. And also, who does your dirty work for you? At least I do my own dirty work. And I'm proud to be a hunter, but I'm proud to teach youth the confidence and the self-assurity to say, yeah, I'm a hunter, I look after my deer, my meat, I control my food and my diet, and be proud of that and not be secrecy. But the main thing is to get rid of that sort of shoot as many as you can. You know, the more tails hanging off the belt, the better you are, the bigger man you are. By getting young fellas to sit and watch deer and say, no, you can't shoot that one. No, that's a hind. She's pregnant. See her big basketball puku and her big udder. She's going to have a fawn any day now. Aha, there's one. There's a yearling hind. You can take that one. And they actually start to understand that it's not all about shooting anything and everything.
You've actually raised all sorts of points there that I could digress into. But one of them is I think that hunting as a sport, I mean, for example, I had an email some months ago now from an animal rights group that were just horrified that we were trying to what I'm doing, and interestingly enough, they weren't a New Zealand animal rights group. I think they might be a little bit more understanding of our sport, but it was basically at one point they said, if you're going to eat meat, you need to get it from the supermarket, that way no animals were harmed. And at that point I nearly fell off my seat. These people clearly have never been to
abattoir.
Yeah, yeah, because they ain't pretty places.
No, they're not.
I understand they've got to be there. But do you think that getting more of the general public to understand what we do is going to help or hinder our sport?
Well, I actually think New Zealanders are quite pragmatic, realistic people. We still are connected to our rural roots to a degree. The thing is that in New Zealand, our deer have no natural predators, and too many deer is terrible for our environment. And, you know, we don't want to be poisoning such a wonderful resource, such wonderful charismatic animals. That's just a crazy waste. So the only way to keep them in balance with the environment is hunting, whether that be recreationally for the pot or some commercial harvest that utilises the meat. But even in the States, where deer, white-tailed deer, are native, they've killed off the wolves and they've controlled things like bobcats and cougars and stuff to the degree where the deer are in quite large numbers. And so they've actually, man has had to take over the role of predator. So in an ecological sense, hunters play a really vital role in the well-being and balance of the environment. And I think that's something it's not really emphasised enough, that we are a part of the food chain in our modern forests. Sure, deer weren't there always, but They're there now. They have no predators. And if we don't take enough, the deer will expand into numbers that they eat the forest out. It becomes skinny and unproductive. And you know, I can take you to places right now and show you places that have had too many deer for too long. The forest is pretty munted and the deer are skinny and unproductive. So, you know, it's about getting that balance. And I think if we were to promote ourselves as environmental managers to a degree in New Zealand, we could get around that sort of animal rights stuff.
I also wonder, and we have gone off topic, but this is a great conversation, about some of the DVDs or some of the videos that I see out there are pretty bloodthirsty, you know? And I don't think that's necessarily a good image for hunters. Do you get what I'm trying to say there?
I think oh, totally. And you see it on national television on some of their hunting shows. Some of the shots aren't very clean, and some of the behaviour isn't that pretty, and it doesn't portray hunters in a particularly good light. It's not how I operate. I try to operate at the maximum ethics because I want the best possible food for my table. And when you put a bullet through a deer's head when it's feeding and it doesn't even know you're there, it doesn't hear the shot and it doesn't know anything. But yeah, hooling up animals with dogs and wounding them and chasing them and stuff, as we sometimes see on some of our mainstream television, is not a good look for hunters, I agree.
And bringing that or circling that back around to hunters as mentors, what mother in their right mind would let their son or daughter go out and do that? If you're portraying it badly, that's not going to help your case in that end, is it, either?
Yeah, I guess so. But a lot of these young fellas, they've grown up with their uncles and their dads and their grandfathers in an era where there was a lot of game and it was a bit of a free-for-all, and the ethics were perhaps not as good as they could have been. And sometimes you have to undo some of that learning. Right. And sitting there with a pair of binoculars, watching deer, is a great way to have those conversations and to undo some of that learning. It's not what the old uncle or grandfather did was totally wrong, but it was at a different time and a different era, and the world moves on, and we have to adjust our behaviour and our ethics and the way we operate to reflect modern times. And I think most people will understand that, and if you can build that into these mentoring programs, young people are incredibly receptive to that sort of message.
And what about, this is something I find interesting, you've got a lot of young people that even live in towns that are, you'd think were quite rural, like Taupo and Turangi, that really haven't connected with the environment around them yet. You know, there's no lineage of hunting, and there's, or if there was, it's been lost. And getting them back out into the bush and out into our hills, how do you go about starting that conversation?
It's really hard. There's a lot of young men, particularly, who don't have fathers. But that's not to say young women don't hunt. They're an incredibly big growth market in the hunting industry at the moment, young women. But you've got to get them away from their PlayStations and reconnect with the real world. You're right. There's a lot of very urban-focused people who get their food from a shelf in the supermarket, who get their heat from flicking a switch on the heater. They don't understand about laying a good crop of firewood down and drying it for next winter. And I guess schools and scouts and those sorts of places are where you go. We go to the schools in Taupo, the Kura, the school here in Tūrangi, and we talk to the teachers about which boys would benefit from these sorts of programs, and we get sort of hand-picked guys. Some of them are real keen hunters, but some of them are couch potatoes who live on their computer. And for some of them, the bush is a real challenge, but it really does make them see the world differently. It's amazing.
And I know from my own experience, for example, at the moment I've had a busy few weeks. It's been, you know, the last 8 or 9 weeks have been full on for not only my own business, but my day job as well. It's just that time of the year. And I'm getting to the point now where I'm craving getting out for a few nights, you know. So I need to be pulled away from these computer screens I have all around me right now and get back to the real world as I see it.
Yeah.
These young people, if they've never seen that, how do they de-stress, you know? And clearly it's by playing up.
Yeah, one of the cool things about the wānanga we run at Kaiwaho with the young Māori youth is the tikanga around the sort of spiritual nature of the connection to the land, the wairua, the feeling you get that that, for me anyway, it's an overwhelming sense of well-being when I'm in the hills. The air is clean, the water is crystal clear, the bush is just full of birdsong. And you can feel the spirit of the Wairua, of the whenua. And for a lot of young Māori, they've grown up with that Māori cultural view, and they grasp those concepts much better than I think some of the Pākehā kids do. That's not to say, I'm a white middle-class Pākehā New Zealander myself, yeah. But I can really relate to the Māori connection through their whakapapa to the land. Through they feel the spirit of the land, the Māori, the life force, and it's something I can totally relate to. And one of the really successful parts of this course, I think, is that we actually broach that spiritual side of hunting. It isn't just about food. It isn't just about going out and being a macho hunter. It's about learning to be part of the ecology, to be part of the land, to feel the spirit, and to sort of walk with it. And for most kids, it's a concept that they're open to. They haven't been blinkered too much just yet. It's a great time when they're sort of 14, 15 to get them out there and say, hey, here's a different perspective on the world.
Yeah, and I think you've nailed it there that, and I'm a bit like you, middle-class European male, but I do feel a connection. Now, I don't personally relate that to something spiritual, but for me, it's still where I feel the most relaxed, and I fully get where you're going with that. It's kind of where I feel most at home. You know, like I know some guys that live in the bush. When I say I know them, I've met some guys that live in the bush full time, and they're not unhappy cats, you know. It really is a different lifestyle, isn't it?
Yeah, well, when I worked for the Forest Service in my early days in Dock, I was probably living in the hills for 6 months of the year, you know, doing a lot of seeker research and forest monitoring and blue duck and kiwi work and the likes. And it became my sort of preferred home, if you like. Mm. I'm lucky that I live in such a beautiful rural setting now. It's very bush-like. But it must be hard to live in an urban situation, particularly, you know, where you got houses crammed on expensive land. There's not a lot of places to run around, and providing opportunities for young people to experience the bush is, for me, a really important part of being a New Zealander and of us having a prosperous future as a society.
Cam, there's going to be lots of hunters listening to the show that are kind of getting what we're talking about and thinking maybe they could do the exact same thing. How do you suggest a hunter would get into mentoring young people?
Oh, I guess there's a number of ways. Formally, you could do it through something like the NZDA Hunts Program. They have a fabulous, the New Zealand Deer Stalkers Association, they have a fabulous hunts program targeted at youth. I used to do quite a bit of work with them when I worked for DOC, doing game management presentations and talking about ecology and wildlife and stuff. Mountain safety as well. You know, they run firearms training, but it's also within the family, family friends. I really enjoy taking family, friends, children hunting, where perhaps they don't hunt. We might fish together, but they don't hunt, and they've always said, oh, Cam, tell me about your hunting. You know, would you like to go one day? And sure, and you take them out. Taking strangers out is a little bit more difficult. You know, but I guess it starts with family and friends as a starting point. What Tom and I are trying to do with the wānanga and the youth training programs out at Kai Waho is a bit more formal. It's got some structure in. In fact, we're putting it on an NZQA framework this year, so kids will be able to get NCA credits for coming out and learning this stuff. But it is a little bit harder for your average person to take strangers out. There's all sorts of you know, modern paranoias about men taking boys out into the wild. But yep. friends and family is a great place to start.
And if you want to check out your article, it's in the December-January issue of NZ Outdoor Hunting magazine. It really is well worth a read. You can find it on most bookshelves, the likes of Paper Plus and Bits and Pieces, I am sure. Cam, thank you so much for your time. I didn't even realise until we spoke on the phone the other day, we're only a few kilometres apart. We've got to catch up for a beer and maybe go out for a hunt.
Yeah, mate, that would be awesome. Maybe you could come and see our group of kids out at Kaiwaho later on this year.
I really want to do that. I'm really enthusiastic about what you're doing. It's only up the road, and maybe we could record a show from out at Kaiwaho, because I really like the concept, and I've talked to Tom about it a few times, and I think you really hit the nail on the head with what you're up to.
Good on you, mate.
And remember, if you'd like to win a year subscription to NZ Outdoor Hunting Magazine, all you've got to do is be active with us. Like us on Facebook, share us and do all that kind of stuff. And if you don't have Facebook, and I know many of you don't, all you've got to do is email us info@thehuntingshow.co.nz. And if you'd like to add me on the Hunter Point app, feel free to. Same email address, info@thehuntingshow.co.nz. Add me on Hunter Point. Why not? That's what it's there for. And feel free to share any of those spots with me you like, although probably you won't. But that's okay. Add me, info@thehuntingshow.co.nz. Guys, it's been a great show. I'm loving summer. Behave and good hunting.
Podcasting from an undisclosed location. From a secret hunting spot known only to him and the guy who told him about it, and possibly the guy who told the guy who told him. It's a show all about hunting in New Zealand and around the globe. This is The Hunting Show. Find The Hunting Show on Facebook and Twitter for up-to-date information on upcoming shows and topics.